Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
All right, here we go. We're back. No YouTube today. Apologize to people that want the YouTube. So we are naked. No, we're not fully naked, but we are talking. It is December 31st. It is New Year's Eve.
A naked podcast would be a very different experience.
It would be a very different experience. But it is New Year's Eve, and we figured we'd fire up like a year in review pod. First, are you a New Year's resolution guy?
Not a resolution. I don't really make a resolution as much as like, I will use this as like a starting point. Like tomorrow I'm like, cleaning up the diet a little bit, like, yeah, we're gonna work out. Right. Like, I'm not doing it as like, so maybe a little bit, but not like, there's nothing like formal. It's more just like, yeah, I'm just, okay. It's a good place to start.
It is nice to reflect.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is not to be all like cheesy, but I do think like that. That's what I like about the new year. Is it allows you to reflect, but then it feels like, okay, here we go, new year. Blank slate, here we go. Kind of a duality to that.
Yeah, it's good for people to have that like ending and beginning. Like
right.
That's good for people to do that, you know. And everybody kind of refreshes at the same time, I think, right?
Yes. That's the one thing I miss about school was the rhythm of school.
Yeah.
Of like, here comes the end of a school year, and then you get a new school year, and there's something about a good reset and rhythm to that.
On a summer break.
And then you get the summer break with it too. But yeah, so I do enjoy New Year's Eve reflecting, and then New Year's Day, there is like a feeling about it that feels like, okay, I'm just trying to be better this year in whatever way you want to do it.
The thought of it being 2023 though is it's scary because I'm just thinking about like I've been thinking a lot about the 1920s, like I don't know why
it's like interesting.
Once it hit 2020 I was like, oh, it's like it made me think about like what people in the 1920s felt like, because it feels like, man, we're really like really going, you know. And so it's like, what, we're already at 23? Like, I don't know. It's like I'm relating everything to 1920. So like, maybe there's a stock market crash.
Right.
But like, I just am. I don't know why. It's like it makes it just like crazier to me or something.
Why are you? Is it because of the nice round number of the year 2000? But or is it just of something of our age where everything, that's the pivot point for? For instance, if someone says something is 20 years ago, I think of 1980.
I still do it, yeah.
But I don't know if that is a product of, like, if someone that's 60, if someone says 20 years ago, they think of 1960, and like, or something like that? Like,
yeah, I don't
know. I'm trying to figure out if it's something with your age, or if for us, it was the nice round figure of 2000, and you know what I'm, does that make sense of what I'm getting at?
Like, a little bit, because I think most of, like, we talk about the 90s a lot here, but I think most of your like forming, the things that form you happen in your first 25 years.
Right.
And it's hard to think about like events in time outside of that. So you get kind of stuck in that time frame a little bit.
Because I almost think, you know, on our last podcast, we were reading about Jason Peters' tweet about Garrett Nelson, and he was like, "I'd always tell Nelly you were born 20 years too late." It's like,
I think 30.
Actually, Jason, he was born 30 years too late.
Yes, but that's the same problem.
Same thing. Like in Jason's mind, I bet he has some pivot point that is just inaccurate. And so I just wonder, at what point, is it going to be 2055? And if someone says 20 years ago, am I still going to go 1980? Like, at what point do I fucking wake up and not realize that?
On that same note, like, our 20 year high school reunions coming up. And if you were to ask me, like, without really thinking through it, like, how many years have been since high school, you'd probably be like, oh, 10. It doesn't feel like a 20, right?
No.
So there is something that it just feels like that's just, it can't be 20
well,
years.
I always
it can't
think,
be that
I,
long.
I know. I always think about age is so, I'm so fascinated with age and time as I get older, where I'll think about how old I am and, you know, I'd be the equivalent of to a kid, to a Lincoln Southeast football player, basketball player as a senior. We are, it would have been like those 80s teams that would come and play in the alumni tournament. And I remember thinking like, God, those are some old guys right there. And it's like, it's amazing that that would be how a high school senior would view guys like me and you.
Yeah.
You know, that's a wild thing to me where I wish people, you know, there's that question of like, if you didn't know your birthday, how old would you feel?
Yeah.
And I wonder how much we play to, well, I am 38 or I am almost 40. And so you act accordingly or you think accordingly or, and it goes the other way, like being young, an 18-year-old, like, oh, he's 40. Wow. I view them a certain way, you know, like, We allow the number to impact a lot with that, you know?
It's weird. It is. It's time, and time is going faster as
oh
you get older.
God.
Like, it's really moving at a speed that is like, I'm starting to go, okay, a month used to feel like a month. A month feels like a week now.
I know. It's nuts. But 2022, almost in the books. It's 4:23 p.m. on New Year's Eve. I kind of wanted to... This is more informal. I think one time we did this, I did like a very like the top 10 stories and it was in order and there was thought like, I'm just going to kind of throw a bunch of stuff out there and we'll react to
are
it.
Are these broad or these Nebraska football or are these kind of anything?
So I have some local. Do you want to do the local stuff first and then do the national? Because I was shocked going through. I just Googled 2022 sports year in review and ESPN had like a great rundown and I wrote down the things that were like, oh yeah,
yeah.
Oh yeah.
Ooh, okay.
Do you want to do local quick? Do you want to
let's mix it up.
You want to mix it up? Okay, yeah, so for the first, I mean, obviously the biggest story of the last year, this would be an easy one, is Scott Frost being fired and being fired, not just being fired 3 games into the season.
Mm-hmm.
By far the biggest and most shocking story of the year. It'll be interesting as time passes how we view this, what we remember about it. I'm not sure if I'll remember the Georgia Southern loss. Because I wrote that down because that obviously ended it all. But I still think that onside kick up 11 was the beginning of the end.
Mm-hmm.
But easy choice for the biggest story of the year.
Yeah, in our world, in our life, for what we do, I mean, we do the podcast. We're big Nebraska fans. That was huge. I mean, that was monumental in terms of like the biggest thing that happened to us. So for sure was... I agree with you. I think for me it was that onside kick was the moment. I mean, because that's a big game. It was the first game in Dublin,
yeah.
Big Ten game against Northwestern. So it was such a weird 5 years for that tenure, and for it to end like that, man, it just I think we almost need to step away from it for a couple years before we revisit and go like, okay, what do we really know went wrong? I think we've gone through it.
Right.
We think we know, but like we also need some time, see another staff, see how they do, and we'll probably have better answers after, let's call it, 2 or 3 years of Matt Rhule.
I think as time passes, you have a better feel of what went wrong with Pelini or why it didn't work with Riley. I'll be interested with time, what kind of perspective we're able to fully gain with what didn't go right with the Scott Frost era, because there's obviously a lot of different, it's never just one thing, but there's a lot of different things. But it is just, again, it is still shocking to me if you would have told me when he was hired, he would be fired mid-season in year 5, and it would be met with pretty much unanimous, like, yeah, probably the right move. It's amazing. But I don't know, like the Georgia Southern loss isn't, at this point, that's not the first thing I think of.
Yeah.
I don't know if there is I think of the onside kick, but I don't know if that'll be the first thing I think of. Like for Callahan, a lot of people think of the Oklahoma State game in 07. For some reason, that game becomes like the synonymous game.
Yeah, or, you got embarrassed and then you're gone.
I don't know what that is for Frost. necessarily. Frost,
it was almost, I think the whole, his whole tenure was like, it was like these losses that we just, every Iowa loss he had almost to
befuddling.
Me. Yeah. I think it's like you put those four Iowa losses on there and
that's,
go.
That's
to me is like the era. It's like, oh my God.
The other story I wrote down, just kind of that Eric Chenander fired after the Oklahoma game then.
Yeah.
That I mean, the guy that held things together, that side of the ball at least, the defense in year four, there was just an enormous erosion. There was enormous fall off, and to get fired four games into the season, and then to also subsequently see how the defense snapped into being like, the defense wasn't great this year, but it got to where it took massive steps forward from the first four games of the season to the last eight. But certainly that's a big story.
Yeah.
When I think of this year locally, Trey Palmer on a variety of levels. I still think, for me, I wasn't around to watch, there had to have been some Johnny Rogers games or some Irving Fryer games that I'm not up to speed on. His performance against Purdue was the best wide receiver performance. And on the short list of best individual Husker performances, not as good, I'm just saying, like, when I'm writing him down, I'm like, okay, Sue versus Texas, you could go Taylor Martinez against Kansas State in 2010. I think you get where I'm at. Yeah. Like, Trey Palmer against Purdue, 7 catches, 237 yards, and 2 touchdowns. And then he has a season where he had single game receiving record, single season receiving record, 71 receptions, the most ever by a wide receiver, second all time, thanks to Marlon Lucky.
Marlon.
How about that? But Trey Palmer, certainly a huge figure in this year locally.
One of the bright spots of the year that I think kept Husker fans engaged was, like, we believe we could win any game because, well, Trey could get 300 yards and a couple touchdowns and made it really hard to defend us in a lot of ways. So
yeah.
He was the first time in my adult life that we had a wide receiver that I just said, like, he's different than anybody I've ever seen.
Yes.
In terms of he's just that fast.
There have been good wide receivers. You and I were huge, and you played with him. I thought Nate Swift was a baller. Todd Peterson was a good player. Got to where Kenny Bell, Stanley Morgan were good players.
Westerkamp really Jordan, good at
Westerkamp
football.
Westerkamp was a good player. I never, like with Trey Palmer, there was a different confidence with him because he was like, it wasn't just, Westy was like the short yardage slot, third and five, 6 yard slant. His was 70 yard bombs that I just haven't seen.
He would change the game multiple times just by running deep routes and seeing who could keep up. Like, it just changed everything. I almost feel like we didn't use him enough.
Right.
Now that I saw, like, when we, like, how many times a game did we throw to him deep? We actually threw it to him a couple times every game. We tried to at least, but almost he should have done it more.
Yeah, I agree. And he also is the one, there have been highly ranked players that you go, I don't really see that. Like, but he's the one, like, Nebraska gets a 5-star wide receiver and you go, oh, that's what.
Yeah,
next level.
He actually, for how good he ended up being, I think he was under the radar coming in. Like, we thought, oh, this guy could be pretty good. But we weren't thinking he's going to be that.
No.
300 yards in a game type of thing. So, I think that game put him, like, firmly in the NFL.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He had a good season. If he doesn't have that game, he might be coming back for one more.
I agree. But that game changed everything for him.
Yeah, that game, I think, he pretty much wrote his ticket to the NFL.
Right. The next thing I wrote down was just the Mickey Joseph rise and then the unfortunate fall. But the Mickey mania that took over from basically mid-September to about, what would you say, November 1? I don't know if it was the Illinois or Minnesota loss that felt like that, okay, that's it, you know? But, like, there was a real, and this might get forgotten as time passes, there was a real month and a half the state's hearts and minds, and a lot of people wanted it to be Mickey in terms of it being the new head coach.
I don't think there was I think the majority of people were pro-Mickey. Some were feverishly pro Mickey.
Right.
There was some people that were more like, let's wait and see and trust Trev here. And there was not that many vocal anti-Mickeys, in my opinion. I didn't hear a lot of like, it can't be Mickey. I heard way more, oh, Mickey, either like I'm fine with Mickey or I'm very want it to be Mickey.
The NickBot Podcast is powered by Runza. You know, there are a lot of ways to greet someone. Hey, hi, hello, what's up? Another way is, what's popping? Well, here's the thing. That greeting has taken on a new meaning now because the answer to what's popping is now Runza's new popcorn chicken. That's what's popping. Runza's new popcorn chicken is amazing. Little, bite-sized, delicious, all white meat chicken that make any day better immediately. I love them. My wife loves them. My kids cannot get enough. 2-year-old Mac, 6-year-old Mava are constantly wanting to get it popping. Great for a snack, great for a meal. Pair them with the best crinkle fries on planet Earth, and you are set. All I got to say is you need to get out to a Runza location nearest you and get it popping. What's so hard to understand about that? Get it popping with Runza's all-new popcorn chicken. Runza makes it all better. I'll be honest, especially as I've grown and progressed as a media member, I've gotten better at meeting a narrative head-on and being willing to give my opinion on something, even if it's going to be against the grain and not be received well.
Yeah.
I would say early on, I was nervous to maybe go against the grain. It's, I mean, put yourself out there and go, it's, yeah, you know, and getting all those arrows. Mickey was one of the first, I feel like I can be honest now, especially because he's completely out of the picture. Yeah. I'll be real honest with you. Mickey Joseph and that topic was the first one that I was afraid to really, not say I didn't speak my mind, but I never wanted it to be him. Yeah. I didn't think it was the right idea for him to be the head coach. But I was a little like, everybody's on edge. Frost was just fired. It's probably not the best idea for the pod and for me to be like, come on, guys, Mickey Joseph, he can't be the head coach.
Well, and I think with him, there was, what I had to do is like, I had to talk it through with a lot of people. Like the real pro Mickey people, I think made a pretty good pitch. I was sort of like, I was still in the middle the whole time. Like I was still trying to understand who Mickey was as a head coach. Cause I didn't know a ton about him as a coach. Right. But I also saw like the recruiting thing was the big push with him, is like the elite recruiting ability, right? Is that the new era of college football? Like that's the part that Mickey, I think, piques so many people's interest. He's a former Husker. He understands Nebraska and the elite recruiter. But like very unproven as a coordinator or head coach,
right,
in college football. Right. So like that's the part where it's like we're like, wow, we may have been over our skis a little bit in terms of that. Like,
yeah, I just think the Mickey mania was so feverish and so real that it even caused me to
slow your, like,
slow my, like, I'll humor, like, it may be like, well, I better humor this or at least hear it out or have an open mind about it.
Yeah.
But I think that that's something that I could see getting lost in 15 years. Not that it's a big, I mean, it'd be a minor footnote, but getting lost about the moment of this year.
You know what's interesting about the way we did our show those months is we talked a ton about coaching, and it was, yeah, we talked about Mickey a lot, but we basically were like, we're going to talk about the coaching search, and we basically said, and we're not going to talk about Mickey.
Right.
We're going to talk about every other potential person. Because I think we kind of understood, like, we don't know what this Mickey thing
is. I didn't even know how to have that conversation.
I just didn't know, like, to me, that's something that, like, Trev either was like, really considering it hard.
I'd love to know how serious he was considering him as a candidate. I don't know. I mean, I think one time I even told you I was having a hard time on, like, Mickey was living in this world where everything that went right in a game, and if they won, it was all because of Mickey. But anything that went wrong, we
bad
can't
players
blame Mickey.
And it's Frost.
Well, I mean, what do you
Scott
expect?
Frost,
so then I was like, well, when that's the case, I don't even know how to begin engaging in a conversation about Mickey. And then you add to the fact that there's no head coaching resume to it. He has no experience. It was a really hard, I think it's interesting to talk this about you now after the fact. I think we had a really hard time figuring out how we wanted to talk about Mickey.
For me, I said from the get-go, it was more I said, look, this is going to be his resume.
Yeah.
And he loses big against Oklahoma. That hurts because the Mickey mania was feverish going into Oklahoma.
Huge.
Then we win two following that. It regains steam. If he beats Illinois and Purdue, this guy might have the job.
I think it's a huge what if. And again, if he – and they were close. They were close to beating Purdue.
Yep.
They could have easily beaten Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
If Casey never gets hurt, who knows how all that stuff plays out. Like, there's a world in which it felt like Mickey being the guy could have been real.
Yeah, because I'm thinking like the Matt Rhule, they were talking the Rhule, but they didn't get Rhule locked up until end. So yeah. Like that's where the Rhule, Matt Rhule being Trev's guy, was probably always going to be, you know, behind the scenes, Trev's doing his job. He's doing what he needed to do, exactly why he ran it like he ran it. So, but the pressure to hire Mickey
would have been big.
That would have been interesting, right? Let's say, okay, you can get Rhule, but Mickey just won four straight and beat Illinois at home, who is a ranked team. Good luck not hiring Mickey. You know, like it would have been then the target then goes from no target to the target's on Trev's back.
Yes. I honestly think it would have been the kind of thing where if he would have hired Mickey and it wouldn't have worked, people would have blamed Mickey, not Trev.
Yeah.
But if he wouldn't have hired Mickey and it didn't work, everybody would have blamed Trev. You know what I mean? So it's just an interesting footnote in this year. I don't think people realize for a month and a half, the Mickey mania was crazy.
You know, that's where like I always talk about like what people on the streets are saying. Like, I think you asked me this last week. Like, people have been talking a lot about Nebraska football, like a little bit, but not quite. Like, there was a month and a half there. It was Mickey, 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 Mickey. Everywhere you went, it was, is it Mickey? Is it not Mickey?
Isn't that amazing?
Is he turning it around now? Is like, people were just...
It's interesting you say that. Yeah. I had more, like, again, everything's anecdotal, but like, I felt like I had more conversations about Mickey, is he going to be the guy, than Rhule after he's been hired.
After Rhule's been hired. By far, actually.
Which, maybe that's a product of in season, you're just more into the program than you are in December or whatever. That could be the case. But the Mickey Joseph was a huge part of this season.
Wow,
this year.
What a ride this year was. It was like the best terrible ride you've ever been on.
And then obviously the unfortunate way that the Mickey Joseph thing ends is like, wow.
And I think that's part of the whole Rhule. That knocked the wind out of a lot of people.
Because a part of me wonders if I think Rhule was going to hire Mickey.
Oh, I know he was trying to.
I think he was going to hire Mickey. I think Mickey was going to go. I think Mickey was asking for a big number, as he should.
Yeah.
There are very few times in life that you have leverage, and when you have it, you use that motherfucker.
Yeah.
And he was doing that.
Yep.
And then we all know the unfortunate situation event that happened, and I think that took the wind. That was one final punch to the gut for Husker fans to be like, I'm checking out.
Why is everything got to be this hard? Kind of.
And I do think people would be more excited about Rhule if Mickey was the wide receiver coach.
I know. It's too bad. It's really too bad that's
how it unfolded.
Yeah. I mean, just because Mickey, he did such a stand-up job for the team this year, and
right,
for that
right.
to end that way.
But it's interesting. The other thing I wrote down was just the long coaching search. I mean, this shit lasted, I think it was like 66 days or something like that. It was 60 to 70 days. The rumor mill only heated. I would say overall it was actually fairly, you didn't hear a lot, but by the end, things were getting pretty stressful as to what was going on. But just to endure, for all of us to endure a two-month coaching search is crazy.
I mean, and you got to give props to Trev Alberts, because like, that is how you handle your job.
It's amazing.
Like, that's how you do your job right. Like, if you want to say, like, pick a job in the world, and you say, you want to learn how to do a job right, watch the way Trev Alberts did that job, right? Like, that's how you do a job correctly.
Yes.
That's the biggest thing he can do in his career there. And he did it like the absolute right way, because that's hard to do. Like that's like a crisis almost, right? Right? Like that's like handling the crisis, like having it being prepared, lay out the steps, follow the steps. He made a hire, which it's starting to look like a better hire every day.
Right, because so, the next thing I wrote down was in Trev Alberts. Obviously, this is maybe if Frost being fired is the biggest story, the second biggest story is Matt Rhule being hired as the Nebraska football coach.
Yeah.
You instantly become one of the most famous people, not only in the moment, but forever. Matt Rhule will be forever famous now,
yep.
Regardless of how long or well this goes. He's instantly etched in Nebraskans' history and lore immediately just by signing his name on that contract.
I know.
So Matt Rhule is now going to be intimately and enormously in part of our lives moving forward for however long. But it was very interesting how he was a guy that was rumored at the start, but he wasn't on the market because he was a head coach for Carolina, and then he gets fired, and then it'll be interesting how there's a way of after the fact it was like it was always going to be Rhule and that's always what people wanted. I don't know if that's necessarily the case. I know I was initially a little lukewarm on it. Yeah. And I'm still sinking my teeth into Rhule and putting my arms around him. But Matt Rhule is Nebraska head football coach. Enormous story.
Yeah, huge.
That's kind of all I had for football. I mean, he could have wrote down Casey Thompson and that's just how surprisingly good he was. Mm-hmm. And maybe that was relative to what your expectation level was. I just didn't know what to expect with Casey. But yeah. Anything else for football, you think? Is that pretty much?
I think we've been so thorough
right.
through the year that's probably good.
The two other things real quick. For Nebraska basketball, I will say that last year's team, that was the worst Nebraska basketball team in my lifetime.
Yeah, I went to one game and it was so bad. It was like you kind of went, do I ever want to watch this team play again?
That they were terrible
mm-hmm.
in every sense of the word. Like they went 10-22. They didn't beat a power conference team until February 9th. They started 1-16 in Big Ten play. They were just the softest team. It was bad. And so that's what makes this year cool. What Fred's done is he shuffled the deck. He went out and got some tough guys, and they're actually
they're playing defense.
They're playing defense. Yeah. They're playing tough. They almost beat Purdue. They hammered Iowa. They beat Creighton. So it's the juxtaposition in just one calendar year on two totally different teams. But I wrote down worst Nebraska basketball team in my lifetime. I've never seen a team.
I don't get to go to a ton of games. I usually try to get to, you know, a couple a year. Yeah. I got to go to the Purdue game this year. And, you know, Purdue was, you know, they had more talent, but like we didn't look that much like the talent difference between them. It didn't look that much different.
Right.
I'm like, okay, that's a good sign for Nebraska basketball. We look tough. We look smart.
Right.
They had a couple crafty, good players, but like,
And the 7-4 guy. Zach Edey.
Yeah, but like, we played him tough. Yes. We played him well.
Right, had every opportunity to win that game.
Yeah.
The other big story, Fred Hoiberg being retained. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. I think a lot of people thought he may get let go after how the first three seasons went from a results standpoint. I think it's pretty clear that Trev didn't want to have to deal with that in addition to everything that was going on. You had the Frost thing looming. You got the $150 million facility. I just think he didn't want to deal with all that. And I'll still
defend both those retainings.
Me like, too.
To me, it's like you don't do it until it's clear. And for whatever reason, I'll go back and say this. It wasn't clear to me that Scott Frost needed to be fired. It wasn't clear to me that Hoiberg should have been fired. Like,
right.
you should do it when you know, even if it's three games into the year.
Right.
And you know. Same right. way, like, if Hoiberg's teams, like, right now look just like they did last year.
Yeah, then you go.
Maybe he's not the coach we need. But you know right. what? Now you're still back to, like, well, we're playing basketball.
I still think it was, to your point, I still think it was the right decision. If you're going off pure results, well, sure. Yeah, like, Frost should have probably been let go after 4 years, and Fred should have been let go. But, like, everything you just laid out, it sums it up perfectly. Like, it's Fred Hoiberg.
It's Fred Hoiberg. Like, that, you know? When we hired him, I thought, man,
unbelievable.
Are we lucky that we just hired Fred Hoiberg?
I watched some, they do some, like, CBS Sports does some, like, anonymous coaching surveys. And at the end of every, like, hiring and firing cycle, they survey all the coaches at best hire. And you go back in that hiring cycle, it was Fred Hoiberg and Nebraska. It was like it was like 60-some percent of coaches said.
Wow.
So, totally get it.
Yeah.
A couple other things. Creighton's season was a shocker. where you lose your entire starting five on a team that went to the Sweet 16. You replace them with freshmen and a Division II transfer. You go back to the NCAA tournament. You win a game in the NCAA tournament. You almost beat Kansas, who goes on to win the national title. So a very, like, I thought, and we'll get into this, like, Greg McDermott went up a peg in my mind. Like, I thought that was his best year coaching ever. So that was a big story. I think it's also always notable, Nebraska's sellout streak didn't officially end.
Important.
Then the last thing locally I wrote down, Nebraska now sells beer at basketball games. It's big. That's a big story.
In the direction of beer in Memorial Stadium.
Memorial Stadium, baby. So that's what I had locally.
Okay.
Nationally. Just hammer through some of these, okay? The Nick Bob Podcast is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors, and I want to talk to you guys about energy efficiency. And if you go onto Pella's website right now, you look at it, and how about this? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different types of windows or doors by Pella won the Energy Star 2020 Most Energy Efficient Award. That's big time stuff right there. And they achieved that in a couple of waves. They got insulated glass, which slows the heat transfer, keeping your home at a more comfortable temperature. They got types of low E glass, which is a glass coating that has been optimized for your climate. They got triple pane glass, which you can upgrade to for increased insulating airspace. And within all of that, one of the keys is proper installation, which is key for window and doors to perform at their best. And you know the Pella experts are excellent at that. Bottom line, energy efficiency matters in making your home more comfortable, and Pella Windows and Doors are at the top of the line when it comes to energy efficiency. Check them out online, PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com. Georgia winning the college football playoff. It's weird. I don't think I have a major takeaway from Georgia winning. My bigger takeaway was that Cincinnati made the playoff a year ago, because I really felt like in its current format, a 4-team playoff, a group of 5 team would never make it, but they made it. But Georgia win? I mean, whoever won the football national title.
So I think the takeaway is Georgia has replaced Alabama as 1A right now.
That's a good point.
You know, like,
especially
right now,
they're taping this now. They're on the precipice of maybe winning 2 in a row.
Yeah, I mean, they're gonna be hard to beat, but like they are, yeah. Like Alabama was 1A for a decade.
Yes,
and I think Georgia just overtook them. It's 1A and 1B now, right?
Clemson was like knocking on the door, but now Clemson has fallen back.
And I think this is what's so hard about being the best is like you got to keep getting these great players and great players, and then you have too many of them that go pro.
Right.
And then you get too many people that now can transfer to go be a start. So, like, it's going to be hard for these teams now, I think, like, to stay on top. I don't know that the NIL era helps these teams anymore. Like, I almost think the sweet spot for some of these teams was
cheating behind closed doors.
Behind closed doors when, yeah. When like,
and you couldn't transfer.
Transferring is hard. So almost from like 2010 to 2020, I think was like, that was the peak for those programs.
Right.
And now it's like a program like Oregon is going to get even better.
Right.
They're going to be able to pay. Like, I don't care. Phil Knight's going to be like, look, there's going to be a lot of Nike contracts.
Sure. USC now is something that's going to come back.
So,
you know,
I'm very interested to see the how much the NIL and transfer portal are going to hurt the Alabamas and the Georgias, the Clemsons, Ohio State's a little bit, like, because they're developmental guys. If people are going to be throwing money, like, so
right.
Those schools are either going to have to pony up and start paying their developmental guys.
They're going to start paying their, I mean, because that's the thing about the Bama, Georgia, Ohio State teams. Like, they're second, they're too deep. Their second stringers are like first or second round picks.
Yeah, they're the future first round picks. So the problem is, like, if you're not willing to pay them $500,000 to $1 million, you know what? Maybe, I don't know, Nebraska.
Maybe they go to Ole Miss. Maybe they go to
Texas,
Nebraska.
Or the next tier down, the, you know, historic top 40 teams, right?
Right.
Those teams are going to be coming for some of your best backups. And so then the same thing, like, and then the more of these guys that are juniors going to the pros, and there's that reload year, it's hard. Like, Georgia's doing a reload year and has much. That's really hard to do. And so, like, Alabama, like, they're, you know, they usually have a year on, year off, year on, year off.
Right.
Because you lose some of your guys. You lose a quarterback, or you lose your, you know, three defensive linemen that won you the national championship. So it's going to be interesting to see, like, how these, like, top-tier teams play out in this era.
Well, the thing that's interesting about what Georgia's attempting to do here now is, and I made a note to research this, and I forgot about it. The list of teams that have won back-to-back national champions.
Not many.
I mean, it's Bama, Nebraska. There has to be some other ones that have won back-to-backs.
Did Oklahoma ever do that? I mean, I'm just saying. I think Oklahoma maybe in
probably
the 70s,
that makes sense.
Like, yeah. 74, 75.
So I guess what I'm getting at now is, like, they're about to move into a, obviously winning a title puts you in a very elite club, but you are going up a level to be one of the very, there can't be more than five or six programs, I mean, ever.
Think of the teams like, you know, the Miami team that won and then they lose the next year, or the USC yep. team that won and then they lose to Texas. Like, it's really hard, even when you bring back Reggie Bush, Matt Lyon. Like,
right.
It's hard to do it again with superstars. So, like I said, we'll see what happens here. They got to beat Ohio State.
Right.
And
which will be tough. But, yeah. I was thinking about that. I'm like, man, what's the list of programs that have won back-to-back titles? Got to be pretty low.
I think.
Now, the hard part is we're getting, when you go back to back in 1892, there was... Yeah, you know, you're getting into that. Like, I'm talking like modern era from 19. Oh, I don't know. If you want to start it at, you know, 1960 and on, 1970 and on, not very many programs have won two. I mean, think of how good Nebraska football was from 1970 to 1997, and it only won back to back one time. It only won three of them. Or four or five of them if you, yeah. Or they did it back-to-back twice.
Yeah, I mean, so back-to-back in
70-71 and then 94-95.
Yeah.
But think about that. The amount of teams that were good enough to win it all?
Not many.
You know, so it's,
let's see here. Winning back-to-back national championships is rare. Blah, 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 blah. Let's see what they got here.
Can't be very many, man. I would, even off the top of my head, I can't think. Bama, Nebraska.
Alabama has done it three times.
Yep.
64, 65, 78, 79, 2011, 2012. Notre Dame in the old days, like, yep. You said. They gave USC 03 and 04, but that was, remember that one was, the 03 one, that was when they had the split.
Split, right.
Yeah, okay. So they did do it then, but they didn't do it in the 0405.
Crazy.
Nebraska, Army. Yeah.
I mean, I was saying it's a short list. So the other thing I wrote down, Kansas winning the NCAA tournament. And I write that, I talk about, like, you see this year, Steph went up a level and a guy like Bill Self goes up a level. So a lot of people that have one title, when you get that second title, you're now in elite company,
yep.
Right? You're with Coach K, with Jay Wright, you're with Dean Smith, you're with John Wooden, you're with the creme de la creme. And I also think Bill Self solidifies himself as the best coach currently doing it.
He's been so consistent for so many years. Insane. I mean, he's owned the Big 12 for 20 years now.
So he's now got two titles. He's got four Final Fours, and then whatever. I mean, he's got, I've lost, I mean, he's got like 16 conference titles.
Yeah, I mean, that's the part. You know, like, when you can win your conference every year, like, you own the conference.
Especially when the Big 12 is the best basketball conference. It's become the best. And so I wrote that down. Also, St. Peter's, that's an all-time NCAA run. First 15 seed to ever go to the Elite Eight. They beat Kentucky in the first round. They beat a good Purdue team as well. It's so crazy that I called on Westwood One their conference championship game against Monmouth in Atlantic City. You ever been to Atlantic City?
No.
Oh, boy.
Nucky Thompson.
Like, I'm telling you, talk about a place that I, even Chalky as like a grown White. Man, wouldn't have felt overly safe walking around. Wow. But it's just crazy that I saw the beginning of it all. But that's that's an all-time NCAA tournament run.
Yeah, that was incredible. That feels like a million years ago, though, to me. Isn't that amazing?
Right,
like,
I know.
March of last year.
Coach K retiring. Huge story. I wrote down, I said he's a top 10 coach of all time in any sport. If you were going to, real quick, I wrote down, I could only get to, Okay, John Wooden, Vince Lombardi, Phil Jackson, Bill Belichick, Nick Saban, Coach K. Who else needs to be in that group? If we have four more spots, if we're saying there are 10 spots, do you agree Coach K is in that spot?
Yes. Yes. Coach K.
Like, I put him above Bob Knight. I put him above Dean Smith. I put him above Adolph Rupp. I put him above, you know, like those.
Yeah,
those.
I would personally. So, like, there might be some that love Dean Smith more than me. I mean, I like Dean Smith, but, like, I'm a Coach K guy.
Right.
So
yeah, I think he's above Roy Williams.
I go John Wooden, Coach K for college basketball. And then I probably, it's like Roy Williams, Bill Self, just because of you. Yes, your connection with them makes me love them, but I also think they're amazing coaches. So,
oh yeah,
he's here's what I'd say. He's the number two all-time college basketball coach. Here's what's hard. So besides football and basketball, what other sport?
Like, is there a baseball coach that is all-time? I don't think so.
No, baseball's not in
baseball
there.
Baseball manager, I guess. Okay, who is the name of it is Tom Osborne on this list?
Top 10 all-time coach.
I doubt
all-time
it.
College football, yes.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
All-time college football, yes. To make all-time...
He's probably not. I think it's probably like if two people in Nashville, Tennessee are making a list of all-time coaches, they're probably not putting Tom Osborne on it. But like he's got one of those resumes that's probably a little better than people realize. But I said Nick Saban's the greatest college football coach of all time.
Nick Saban is now the greatest college football coach of all time. Then it's like...
Then you get your Joe Paterno's, your...
Well, I put Ozzie over Paterno.
So do I.
I put Ozzie over Paterno.
Urban Meyer.
Bear Bryant, I think, goes... Does he go above Ozzie?
Not to me.
Not to me, but... how many titles did he win?
Did he win more than three? He might have.
64, 65, 78, 79. So he won four. Ozzie won three, but Ozzie could have won five or six. But
and Ozzie, the consistent, it's that from 1972 to 1997, an unprecedented level of consistently elite. It was the best college football program.
Yeah, I think Ozzie. So if it's a draw between or if it's close to anybody, I'm going to go Ozzie, of course, because of I know him and love him. So, but I'm trying to not be like Nebraska bias here.
I don't think
here.
He is.
A Bill Walsh would be a guy that we have to consider. Bill Walsh was
Jimmy
revolutionary.
Johnson.
Jimmy Johnson won in college and
in
pro.
The pros. Then you get your Bill Parcells. You get your
Parcells.
You get your Mike Ditka. Your
Ditka, no. Parcells, Don Shula. The time. I mean, he the most wins. Right.
Right. Bill Cowher. I'm just trying to throw out names.
No, Ozzie over Cowher. Now, Ozzie over Don Shula or Tom Landry, right? Those are like the long, those guys had like the long run. So that's where it's hard is like, I'd almost want to put Ozzie, Don Shula. Like that's another
what, like you when you get into listing football coaches, just to be hard to, you know, how do you separate Tom Osborne?
I think you have to separate by sport almost. Like you have to say like, okay, let's do top 5 or 10 of each sport
we only have one NBA. We have Phil Jackson is the second of all time. Yeah. I mean, there's Pat Riley, Red Auerbach, Greg Popovich. You could even Steve Kerr's built himself quite a resume here.
Kerr's he's too recent. He hasn't put in the years, right? You have to endure 20 years of coaching. Right.
He's
right?
only been a head coach for
8 years?
Eight or 9 years, but he's got four titles.
Four titles, 8 years. I mean, it's unbelievable. You know, but it's like he hit the you walked in, it's like...
Here's Steph Curry, Clay
Thompson.
It's
a little bit like Phil Jackson, except for then he did it again with the Lakers.
Right.
So that's where Jackson goes to the top, I think.
Right.
But Red Auerbach,
Pat Riley, Greg Popovich.
Riley, also because of like how good of a front office guy he is,
right,
too.
Right. Because did Riley win when the Heat won in 06? Was Riley the head coach?
Yeah.
So, I mean, pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Pretty impressive. But Coach K retiring, big story.
Yes.
Whoever wins the Super Bowl is always a big story. Rams beat the Bengals 23-20. It's actually a good finish to that game. I think it's the big story with that to me was, you know, you get Matthew Stafford spends over a decade just in Detroit, like not able to win. And then all of a sudden he gets in a different situation. He wins year one. Sean McVay, the boy wonder. Mm-hmm. I think he's changed how people hire, and he gets a ring. But it was also an incredible run from the Bengals. And then, you know, the Burrow connection and then the Zach Taylor connection was a huge story of the last year.
The Bengals are relevant. It's really kind of cool to see the Bengals be relevant. And the fact is there's two Nebraska guys that kind of have made them relevant. Right. And you got to love it. I mean,
it's amazing.
I call Joe Burrow a Nebraska guy because, his brothers are friends of mine, and I knew his dad, who was a Husker, and so
And there's always the unfortunate connection of Nebraska, maybe could have had him and didn't, but he's synonymous with Nebraska in that regard.
That one's going to age worse for us, too.
You'd think?
Yeah.
Speaking of Steve Kerr, the other thing I wrote down, the Golden State Warriors winning their fourth championship. It vaults Steph into a top 10 player of all time to me.
Yep.
It vaults, it changes, I almost think it changes... It changed a lot. This title changed a lot for the Warriors and for Steph. To win it, because there was some people, and I'm not saying I maybe would humor this conversation, but okay, you won one, then you get KD and you win two.
Mm-hmm.
You got Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
All right. But this, for that group to do it again, pretty impressive.
Clay coming back from the knee, too.
Yes.
I really felt, that solidified Steph and Clay. It kind of almost made Durant look worse.
Oh, I don't think there's any question. I don't mean to be Stephen A. Smith, Skip Bayless first take segment. But I don't think there's any way you can look at that and view that as something that probably isn't good for Kevin Durant's resume and all that stuff.
And I think that the fact they've been the whole Brooklyn, it just feels ugly there. It just feels like things have...
Right. So he leaves, Brooklyn goes, has struggled, and Golden State goes and wins another title? That's not a great look.
No.
Not a great look.
But they got magic. They got magic between, Clay, Steph, Steve Kerr. And I guess you got to give Draymond his due. I mean, Draymond's not my number one guy, but he plays winning. He plays winning basketball for them.
And it just, again... The big thing, I thought it was silly because I think Steph should have won MVP in 2015. I mean, give me a break. Iguodala, come on.
Yeah.
But the big thing people hung over him is that he never was a finals MVP. He now adds that.
Do people just to find the one thing you don't do and be like, but you've never done that, so that's I'm going to now. It's a really weird trait people do, especially in the media. It's they find
that one thing.
People that do amazing things. And they just search for something they haven't done, but you haven't done this. It's is that just a weird tick they have?
I think so. But you could tell Steph, the emotion. Remember, he was crying on the floor in the Boston Garden. And what he did in, what was it, game five, where he just went off. He had 47 or something. And as the best Steph's ever been was last year in the playoffs.
He's the greatest shooter the world has ever seen. Yes. The greatest to ever shoot a basketball. Just by far. And then he also is a winner and he's just an all around good player. And it's just amazing. It's a gift to watch that guy play basketball.
The other thing I wrote down, Nikola Jokic winning his second straight MVP. Just kind of along the same lines of what we're talking about with Georgia. And it's a short list of people that have won back-to-back MVPs.
It's under the radar.
It's under the radar.
People don't talk about them that much.
People don't, right now when people, you stopping them in the street and saying, name the best players in the league. Not everybody's going to name Jokic right away.
No.
And it's just, part of it, he's in Denver and they haven't had a bunch of playoff success, but pretty amazing. The list of players to win back-to-back MVPs is small and it's an elite group.
Yep.
The great Bill Russell passed away this year.
Mm-hmm.
The NBA's greatest winner, even for being a Jordan guy, he's the great. He is, when you think of winner in sports, it is Bill Russell.
Yeah.
11 championships, and not only one of the greatest athletes, but everything he did in terms of social change, all that stuff, just an amazing life and an amazing person.
A trailblazer in every sense of the word. I mean,
yes.
he was a force. And I don't think our generations can really understand how good and how much of a winner he is, because you just didn't get to see what he was about. And I think sometimes people don't believe like, oh, I couldn't, like, yes, trust me. Like, yeah, like next level good. You can take next level good and put it in an ear, right? And so, but it's also like how you do in your era is
that's
all that
it.
Matters.
I'm
don't
so
need to worry about,
right?
Like,
cool. Could he have done, well, you put him against Rudy Gobert. What happens? He kicks Rudy Gobert's ass. Yeah. That's what he does.
And Rudy Gobert, like you don't have any training. Nobody's going to spot you when you're 13 and right, teach you how, like, Rudy Gobert's 10 times worse than he is now playing in Bill Russell as Bill Russell was.
Right. Everything's
so
relative.
Bill Russell will crush him.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. But certainly, that's a huge story of the year. The other thing I wrote down, LIV Golf. We don't have to talk a lot about this, but boy, shook up the golf world pretty good, where professional golf on the PGA Tour, man, that has been something that has been status quo and something I've never even really thought about.
Yeah.
Just kind of like how it's constructed and how these people, how these athletes get money. There's no, the only guarantee money they get is from sponsors. Other than that, it's kind of odd to think like you have a professional league where, think of like the NBA, these guys didn't get paid unless they won, and the vast majority of their money actually came from like endorsements.
Yeah.
And so the only way they got money from basketball was if they won. Is this an interesting
model? So explain to me, like, what's a contract look like from LIV Golf?
Well, they pay, they a lot of them are just,
like,
now,
is it,
I
like
think the more you
$100 million?
Like, yeah, like some of these guys signed a $100 million contract.
See, I guess, and I haven't been following as closely in terms of the contract.
Well, I think one thing you, and I don't want to, I mean, I'm not up to speed on all the P's and Q's and everything within these LIV Golf contracts, but I think one thing you found out is there was a little bit of fine print in these contracts where it wasn't specific. I think there was some hidden things within there that weren't necessarily great for some of the golfers, but yeah, I think these guys were basically given contracts. We'll give you $100 million, you know, Dustin Johnson to come play LIV Golf.
Yeah.
And
okay, here it is. $200 million for Phil Mickelson, $150 for Dustin Johnson, $125 for Bryson DeChambeau, $100 million for Brooks Koepka. I mean,
so
it's $100 million. I mean, can you turn that down?
And so, like, I think that's the thing that you know, a guy like Ernie Els, who was a big part of pushing this towards, and then there's the whole morality thing of, you know, working with the Saudis and all that stuff, that, like, that's another conversation. But, you know, just the way you look at how the sport is built, I think, or people like Ernie Els felt like it's not right that these guys are professionals and they're the only way they're getting paid is if they win, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think a guy like Tiger, who is adamantly anti-LIV Golf, who is all about competition, and that you know, that's got to be a part, that's what makes professional golf.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It'll be really, really interesting to see what does professional golf look like in 2 years, 5 years, 10 years? Because LIV came up and shook shit up pretty good.
Well, here's the thing, is now it's going to be the people that claim to be like Tiger Woods, right?
Yeah.
And Tiger can genuinely be that, but he's also making $1 billion.
But I've heard LIV offered him something that was close to $1 billion.
Probably. They probably did. And that's, and he's got enough money where he can turn that down. But,
and he's accomplished. It'd be interesting if they did that when he was in 1998.
Nick, I'm telling you, it would be really hard. Nick, $1 billion is,
and then obviously you wouldn't be $1 billion in 98, but when he won in 97, he was instantly like the guy, you know? And so, yeah.
So the next guy that has like Tiger Woods-ish apparel, I mean, or appeal,
yeah,
and they throw $1 billion at him before he's made, you know, 20 or 30 or 50 million. Like, that's insane. It's so insane.
Completely
that you
insane.
Just go, well, maybe I'll consider that.
It'd be interesting to see what professional golf looks like now. Because even now, like, you know, some, they're trying to make a hard and fast rule with PGA Tour. Like, if you're a part of LIV Golf, you can't play in the majors. Ooh. There's been that discussion. I think the Masters came out and said that the guys that are on LIV Golf can play in the Masters. But that, honestly, I feel like that's what, to save the PGA Tour and save professional golf as we know it, I think it's going to take that. I think it's going to take the PGA Tour probably making some changes with, you know, how they structure money with their players. But at some point, if you tell Dustin Johnson, Bryson DeChambeau, Phil Mickelson, on and on and on, you can't play in the Masters, you can't play in, you know, these other non-LIV Golf, and I don't know where the USGA is, or the US Open or the British Open. Like, if you can't play in these majors,
But then does it hurt the majors?
It does. That's the problem.
It waters down the majors if these guys aren't playing, which means that it almost self-inflicts a wound on the PGA,
yeah,
right?
So that's like, the hard part.
So they got to decide how to do this. I mean, oof.
See, tough,
this
is, right? Be interesting to see what happens. The other thing, we don't have to talk a lot about that, but I mean, Serena Williams retired. She's probably she's the GOAT tennis player and probably the GOAT tennis player, male or female.
I mean, she... How many titles did she win?
Oh, God. Amazing. I don't even... Like, her resume is just absurd. By the way, if you haven't seen King Richard...
That's what I was going to say. Like, hey, it's an amazing King Richard movie. All I can tell you about Serena Williams, I really like King Richard.
Yes, King Richard was an incredible movie. But Serena, I mean, the greatest tennis player to ever live.
And she's 41. Wow, God, to play that long? Like, that's a long time to be playing.
So to me, anytime the greatest whatever hangs it up...
Yeah.
That's a big story. Yeah, it's a huge story. So.
I didn't watch a lot of.
I didn't either. I'm not going to claim. I can count on one hand the amount of, like, I don't know if I ever sat and watched. Shame on me. I probably never sat and watched a full tennis match of Serena's. Yeah. But to be honest with you, I don't know if I ever watched a full tennis match. Period.
In the 90s, like when I was like a kid, I watched a lot of tennis, like Michael Chang, Andre Agassi,
Pete Sampras,
Jim Collins.
That's right.
And so like. Yeah, Pete Sampras. So when I was, I love tennis as a kid. I stopped watching a little bit more as I got older, but still every once in a while you watch.
Yeah, you get Nadal Federer, because Federer retired this year as well.
Yeah.
So two of the greatest players ever hanging it up. Yeah, USC and UCLA leaving the Pac-12 and joining the Big Ten. Obviously, it's a weird thing because it hasn't officially happened yet, but the story breaks this year. Huge story. Enormous story. As seismic as it gets.
It is beginning. It has begun. The shift to the Super Conference it's happening.
Because you had Oklahoma and Texas the year before going to the SEC. Now you have USC and UCLA going to the Big Ten. And you wonder it seems like the Big 12 has kind of has steadied the ship a little bit. Yeah. And they're going to survive. Pac-12, who knows? I mean who knows?
Kansas State and TCU doing really well this year helps them, right? Kansas doing better helps them.
And Kansas doing, yes, like,
Oakley, right. Okie State being good, like, it helps. I do think, though, if they have a couple down years, it's not going to look great. The next big domino to fall, though,
Notre Dame.
It's Notre Dame or Oregon, maybe?
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah, I still think everybody's waiting on Notre Dame. That's probably Notre Dame, thought is.
I'd love if the Big Ten gets Notre Dame.
For sure.
If Oregon and Notre Dame go to the Big Ten, it's like...
My thing is, what I've read is that they're thinking about travel partners and equity and balancing geography. So I actually wouldn't be surprised if it's... Like, I could see a couple of West Coast schools, like Oregon and Stanford or something
Oregon, Stanford, Washington probably
come in
makes
and
sense.
Maybe and Notre Dame. I think you want to balance it a little bit. And then
Nebraska probably
going to be in the Big Ten West, which is going to feature the West teams.
Probably,
you know?
Iowa, Minnesota.
Maybe Illinois or...
Illinois, that's the one that gets tricky because... Or maybe Notre Dame because Notre Dame plays...
Notre Dame and USC are rivals.
USC every year. So maybe that would be kind of cool. And actually Nebraska and
Notre Dame got a little thing too. So, but that huge story.
I still think good for Nebraska. Like we
have done well traditionally.
We made the move to the Big Ten. We've played terrible in the Big Ten. But I think long term, we've never been out in the cold because of it.
For sure.
Which now it feels like the Big 12 is in the cold almost.
Right. Because they get they got Central Florida, Houston, BYU, and Oh, God. Who's the fourth Big 12 team that they're adding? Florida. Cincinnati. There you go. Boom. Yeah. Yep. So we'll see what kind of value those people bring as well. Interested to get your take on Aaron Judge broke Roger Maris's 61 home run record this year. To me, Bonds is still the home run king with 70 or whatever he hit. I mean, I get the roids, all that stuff. It's also hard for me. Like, I was in St. Louis. I saw McGuire hit 62.
I still, even though, like, I love the Sosa-McGuire thing so much more than the Bonds thing, because I think by that point, did we all kind of suspect Bonds?
Yeah, I think so.
I think we're starting to suspect Bonds.
I think we suspected it with Maguire and everybody, yeah. But like, I guess I just think it's interesting. Like, it's a huge story, but it's a weird one. Cause like,
I felt like it was under the radar for hitting that many home runs. Right. And then I had people tell me, Nick, no, it was on the news every day. And I was like, really? Maybe I just feel like
it was cutting into college football game. Like when he would go to bat, ESPN would cut into a college football game.
And maybe that was more than I caught on, but I felt like I didn't hear people talking about it. Like, yeah. I didn't hear
not like the home run race of the summer of
The 97 was like, it was like a mania. It was like everybody, whenever Sosa and Maguire were up, were trying to find a TV. All summer.
Yes.
It was like an all summer thing, all fall thing. So I think the Judge thing was amazing. I mean, what he did, that's amazing to do. I think it's hard to put it in perspective because of the Bonds, Maguire, and that they're tainted.
Well, it's like you saw, it's always hard when you saw someone hit more than 61 home runs. Like, you saw it.
It's just too bad that that the era got so out of control with the roids that right. like
I know
it got they let it get that far.
The Astros won the World Series. The only reason I wrote this down is a little bit of redemption for them, probably for the cheating scandal from a few years ago of stealing signs with their all that stuff. Yeah. But also Argentina wins the World Cup, beats France. Messi finally wins. A lot of people say it's the greatest World Cup final ever.
I saw a few of the goals just throughout the day. I mean, that game, and I watched the last like 30 minutes. I was like, this is amazing. This incredible. Was great.
It's nuts. Mike Leach passed away. One of the most innovative football coaches ever. I guess I didn't realize until someone passes, you don't realize the impact they had. But like, you talk to a lot of people in and around football, and it's like that guy, there are a lot of coaches that come and have success. There aren't a lot of people that come in and truly change the sport.
Yeah.
Leach kind of changed football with how, you know, the run and gun, the way he kind of
approached it. I faced his teams multiple times, and they gave us problems a lot just because they were very different. I mean, still nobody's doing what they were doing
right.
the years they played us. They would do these things where the linemen had these splits that were like 3 yards.
Yeah, right.
What do you do?
You go, okay.
But the second year they did it, we almost blitzed every play. Like we had all these guys in the line of scrimmage, and it was basically like they had to pick one, and there was always a free guy. So like it was kind of an interesting, I wouldn't ever run anything like that.
But
he was so
creative
to try anything.
Right. And then you combine with his personality, which he had gobs of it. You know, it was such a unique, fun guy. And then the last thing I wrote down, and I'm probably forgetting some stuff, but last thing I wrote down is, and I think it's something that Ivan had go, oh yeah, Tom Brady retired and then unretired. Kind of amazing to think about, like the greatest football player to ever live, retired and now came back, and now him and Giselle are getting divorced.
I wonder if that had a piece of the
I think so too, which is a little like, damn, Tommy, you're my guy, but like, I mean, it seems like right now he chose like football over like her. That's kind of what it seems like. Bro, what are you doing?
I don't know.
But it's just, you know, anytime a retire and an unretire is a big, a big story. So yeah, those... There you go. Like, kind of a nice way to reflect on 2022 with all, like, a lot of stuff happened. A lot of stuff happened in sports.
Yeah, it's, it's almost like what's weird now is like the years are going faster, but then it's like the memories seem farther away.
I know.
Like, you're saying all those things. I'm like, I can like barely remember.
Barely remember the Super Bowl. I barely remember like the football national title game a year ago. I barely remember it.
March Madness. Like I said, you said March Madness. And I was like, I mean, like it's felt like 10 years ago.
Right. As we sign off here, what was biggest achievement event of this last year for you? Anything in particular stand out?
Personal or just like event?
Either one, you know, it could be a fun trip, a fun moment, a big thing that you did professionally. Was there anything major with you? For me, it's I had a baby, had my third baby.
Oh yes, that's right. Your boy Marv, me and him Marv became best friends yesterday. Yes. So that was good.
Anything personal with you happen? I'm trying to.
You know, I'd say we went to doing two pods a week. Yeah. I think that's a big. That was a big.
Yeah, I thought we had a good year. I thought we had a really good podcast year. Me and you did
our best. I mean, yeah. I think easily our best. Doing two a week and like the response on YouTube to
incorporate like a little music into it. And
I think we took a little bit of a leap this year, just adding more and being really consistent through the season. That was really, I think that was pretty sweet in terms of like pod in the year.
So. Right. And then I don't have like 2023. I always, you know, in terms of not a New Year's resolution, but a goal. And something I think you and I have talked about of just like, I still don't feel good about my social life. You know,
mine's terrible.
And I don't know what to do about it, but I'm going to try. I don't know what that even looks like. It's hard when you have kids.
This is my social life.
I know. That's what.
You know, the best part about this, this is it. This is like, this
the podcast has saved my social life with
you. That's why I like it. Maybe I don't feel so bad. It's like, we get to do this twice a week. So I'm like, it gets a lot of like our, like, I've been dying to talk to you about
it. I know.
This,
so we hang a little bit. But yeah, I just want to, I just want to get, I would say if to, like, I want to get to the point in 2023 where I'm not trying to get through each day.
Yeah.
And I'm sure parents probably can feel me with that. Like, there's a feeling with kids where you're just trying to get them to, like, when you hear them cry and you got to get them out of the crib, it's like, all right, it's a battle just to get them back in that crib at night. Like, I want to try to get to where I'm not like, I'm not playing from behind. You know what I mean?
That is such a truism. Like, we all know it. Like, there's a nap time and there's a bedtime, and you're just like, there's a point in each part of the day where you're like, just get me to 11, me to 7. You know, and that's a bad way to think.
I hate that I live like that.
Like, I think the first couple hours when you're watching your kids, you're not thinking that way,
right?
And then at some point they just start, you start going,
bad.
Yeah.
Oh man,
you want some you time,
right? And so I want to get to where I have such a better handle on my life, where I'm not getting through. It's not a grind to get through each day. And then not only do I have such a hold on that, I can also like carve out time to be more social and do different things. I don't know what that looks like, but I'm going to try.
I think what's hard is not as much like having kids. I think it's little kids. I think 0 to 4, they need certain things and amounts of energy and attention that like, it's just like every adult that's got a kid figures out like, this is hard.
The other thing I got to do that you certainly, you know, you're one of the most remarkably consistent people at this is like, now some of this spills into a year ago. In a year and a half, I've had quite the weight fluctuation. I lost, at one point, my lowest point, I lost 32 pounds.
Oh, yeah. That was the middle of summer, right?
Yeah.
You're just, yeah.
I lost, but then have a baby, the third baby. I then, you know, Marv had some oxygen stuff too early, which, you know, like getting great workouts in is going to be challenging. Yeah. Then I have my hernia surgery. And then before you know it, I've put on like, you know, 15-ish pounds, almost 20 pounds. Like, so now I got to like, hopefully we're talking next year, like I got to lose that shit again, you know? So everybody has like the almost every New Year's resolution centers around like, I got to get back on the grind and all that stuff. The good thing is when you've done it, you know, like, okay, I did it.
Yep.
I've done it. Just got to do it again. It's amazing how, do you have any secrets for people on how like you are one of the most remarkably consistent, you're very disciplined.
Yeah.
But like you, it's amazing. I've never seen you really like.
I'm down for me. I'm usually like at 200 and I'm like light for me right now.
But it's amazing how amazing
I'll swing with how, I usually eat pretty good, but sometimes I'll get, you know, off eating soup, you know, clean as I'd like, but I don't go 2 days without working out almost ever.
Right.
I feel bad. Like I'm the type, like it's just in my nature now. Like I got to work out, you know.
It's a great feeling when you have that. Cause when I was on my, like I had that where if I went with one day, I was like, shit, like I was shaking. I felt terrible. Oh. I would, you know, all that stuff. And so, but yeah. So do you think that's the biggest thing?
Well, I think that leads to, that's the first step into the next good step, right? Like if I work out, I usually eat better.
I agree.
If you're laying around, you usually eat worse, you're bored, you know, like you feel worse, you sleep worse. I sleep better when I work out. Like it all usually works
for me. Well, I didn't get sick for a year.
There you go.
I'm serious. I did not get sick for a year. And then, like, I put on weight again and I got sick. Like, it's wild how much
that's how it works.
The other thing, too, I feel like for me, I can feel when I eat bad food, it really affects me. It affects my energy. It affects how I feel. But yeah,
New Year, Nick, is the time.
I know. I got to try,
start again.
Got
to get back on it. To be born anew.
Got to get back on it. So there you go. About an hour and 7 minutes, a little 2022 year in review. All right, man. It's New Year's Eve. We're gonna eat some food. We got some sparkling grape juice. We're gonna do a fake countdown with Mava, and we'll drink some fake champagne. And that's on the plans here.
We are not. I mean, I am so proud that I'm not going out. We kept trying to do that for years, and it's just like it's become my least favorite holiday.
I'm telling you, I'm not going out, and I'm. Couldn't be happier about it.
Yeah.
Like if someone even right now, like if Kim came down, like, hey, you and Bo can go out and you guys can celebrate New Year's. I'd be like, you sure?
No, there's a desperation out at New Year's that I've been a part of, and I maybe was the desperate. You're either desperate. I used to be desperate to you want to meet a young lady.
Or like, when the ball drops, it's kissing.
Someone
time.
To kiss.
Right.
Or you're desperate to have a great time because this is your night out.
Right.
And you're searching for the... I did that so many years, and I just went, what am I doing?
I know. I'm with you.
I'm just
not doing it.
Let's quit searching for that. You know,
quit
like
searching, baby.
Yeah.
Quick searching. Okay, well, Happy New Year, man. Let's go. We'll get you home and get you to doing nothing to celebrate New Year's Eve. How about that?
Here's to 2023.
Cheers, everybody. Cheers.
A Herd at Sports Network production.